Convenience shoppers will call around to the various offices close to their homes and make one or more appointments. They may find that your first available opening is not to their liking, but because they don't know if they can do better somewhere else, they go ahead and put their name on your schedule. Some offices will mail or fax this person a form that they have to fill out and return by fax or mail before their visit. This is done to smoke out the shopper, that is, to bring them out into the open. If the form isn't received within a certain time frame, it becomes the reason to call the person back. If the person isn't sincere about making their appointment, this call will reveal it. This technique assumes that you've set an appointment out far enough to make such an exchange. Some offices do this by email so that the exchange is more instantaneous. This approach only helps smoke out the insincere. It doesn't really address the underlying problem. If you had been the most convenient for the convenient shopper, it would have been your practice that they showed up for. Some of you have heard us talk about the concept of market share. When your prices or availability aren't in line with what patients want, it limits the share of the overall new patient market, that is, prospective new patient market, that you will have access to. Imagine your slice of the market pie as small and inadequate if your prices or your convenience appeal only to a limited group. The no-shows or cancellation of convenience shoppers is the personification of the market share concept. If people are scheduling and then predictably not showing up, you can know that it isn't that these patients have whimsically changed their mind about treatment. It's that they've chosen to get that treatment at a clinic that fits their need profile. If your convenience, that is, your ability to offer a near instant appointment time, isn't in line with what the majority of callers want, make no mistake, you don't have a missed appointment problem. You have a convenience problem. I've even heard doctors and staff vilify callers who don't find the convenience offering of the clinic acceptable. They might refer to them as bad or junk patients. You can't increase your share of the convenience market just with clever scripts. You have to increase the availability of immediate or near immediate openings. To do this, you might have to add staff, space, equipment, even another doctor. Somewhere in there, you might even have to expand the space that you practice in to facilitate the additional convenience. In other words, you might end up spending over $1 million to stop missed appointments. Oh, it's what you needed to do anyway, but no one likes to think of solving the missed appointment problem as being so expensive. It's more than worth it, however, as you're going to see before we're done, because there's far more missed new patients at stake than just missed appointments. This same principle could be applied to each of the other classes of shopper, the compassion shopper. Compassion shoppers are callers who are highly sensitive about their situation. When they call, they want to make sure that they're going to encounter sensitive, caring staff and doctors when they come into the clinic. Unfortunately, they attempt to make this determination just by listening to your receptionist's voice. Most doctors are completely unaware that a compassion shopper or a compassion market even exists. You see, patients are far more sensitive than you might have previously imagined. There's actually a continuum of need or sensitivity on the part of your patients. That continuum can range from the hypersensitive to the semi-conscious. If you're getting compassion shopper no-shows, it indicates that the practice is only staffed and trained, that is, how many staff and how well trained, to appeal to a small range of that sensitivity continuum. I can tell you right now that you're losing compassion shoppers if your phone rings 5 times before it's answered. The compassion shopper will naturally assume when they hear that you are too busy to care about them and their special personal situation. I have to tell you that I would never have personally known the depths of patient sensitivity if I had not had clusters of clients. That is, where I have maybe 3 or 4 doctors all within a 2 or 3 mile area. Because of that, I was able to watch one office donate patients to another office and do it month after month. We call them the donor and recipient offices. I've talked about this on previous tapes, but the thing that kind of sticks out in my mind is that the donors don't know they're donating because of this phenomenon I'm describing where people call, pretend to be sincere, make an appointment, and then just don't show up. What I found in talking to the recipient offices is that all you have to do is sound a little bit rushed, abrupt, rude, the least bit interrupted, And the patient that is the hypersensitive, or the one more toward that end of the continuum, is put off by it. And though they'll go ahead and make the appointment, they're such sensitive people. Remember, they care about your feelings and their feelings, and they'll put their name down, but they'll end up going somewhere else. Practices lose this percentage of their potential market share for four simple reasons. Number one, they're understaffed. Even the best, most caring staff, when overworked, fail to convey compassion and sincerity. This is easily fixed. Hire more staff at the front. I think most of you know our ratios. You're going to need about one person at the front desk for that is non-clinical for every 15 new patients a month. All right, reason number two, staff are unaware. That is, they've forgotten what it's like to be a patient or in that patient's situation. This has become a job to them. They no longer feel compassionate toward patients in pain. Sometimes this occurs because the staff person, as a patient themselves, doesn't fall at that same point along the sensitivity continuum. In other words, since they're not all that sensitive, why should anybody else be? It doesn't bother me. People are just making this up. They're faking it. They need to get over it. This is not as easily fixed, but it's still fixable. Let the staff person know that missed new patient appointments are a direct symptom of their failure to emotionally engage with patients. All right, number three, uncaring staff. There's a motivational or attitude problem. They've defaulted to that all too human state of thinking that their life and their problems are the only ones worth considering. This is the most difficult of the three so far to correct. It involves a receptionist changing really at the molecular level, and the odds are low. It's difficult to quantify the manifestation of negative or low commitment attitudes on the part of staff. You're going to do best to insist that they follow their script. If they refuse or fail to, you have no choice but to make a change. That is, if you want to stop your missed appointments. If you replace this person and the no-shows stop or slow down noticeably, you know that you've found and fixed the problem. All right, number four, undertrained staff. I'm talking about staff that can't answer the two hard questions posed to them every day by prospective new patients. Number one, do you take my insurance? And number two, how much do you charge for this or that? If staff aren't trained to handle these two questions properly, you can bet you're going to get failed appointments and lots of them. After your undertrained receptionist bungles either or both of these questions, polite callers will make an appointment that they have no intention of keeping. The exact scripting for these two hard questions will be given next month when we lay out our appointment compliance system. All right, let's move on to the person who misses an appointment other than the first visit, or in other words, a regular visit. This is not a new patient. This could either be a hygiene patient or a restorative patient. When you've identified a problem with regular patient visit cancellations, there are only two places to look for the possible cause. One is the reception staff, the other is the doctor. First, let's talk about the reception staff. Assuming the doctor isn't at fault, whoever's been tasked to manage this patient is either overworked or undermotivated. Overworked in that they can't really stop and focus on the patient that's leaving the office. They don't have the time to make the phone calls and do the follow-up. Undermotivated, too lazy to do anything other than what's forced on them by the doctor or patient that's standing right in front of them. This is usually identified when a doctor realizes that the current receptionist can't begin to keep up with the job in the same way that the previous employee easily handled the position. This is not easily fixed. Throwdowns and threats reach some of these staff, but not all of them. And finally, number three, poorly trained receptionists. They simply don't know what to do to stop the onslaught of missed appointments. Remember, we talked about systems to manage the patient's lack of systems? Well, a poorly trained receptionist doesn't seem to have access to those systems because no one's taken the time to prove to them the importance of a systematic approach to patient management. The entire practice suffers. And this is the easiest to fix. Get a good patient management system in place. Teach the receptionist the importance of each step, everything from mailings to strategically timed follow-up calls. All right, next, let's look at the doctor's role in preventing missed appointments. Remember, these are regular visit missed appointments we're talking about. The doctor has no direct influence on the first visit or new patient no-show. They haven't even had time to offend this person yet. That's the good news. On the other hand, the doctor has more to do with regular visit no-shows than anyone other than the patient themselves. Yes, to a degree, the patient's own willingness to take responsibility for themselves and their own health are a major no-show factor. However, the patients that I would call reachable, those who would become reliable patients if they were to hear the right presentation from the doctor, with them, it all comes down to the doctor's ability to communicate value. Now, value isn't good service. Value isn't low prices. Value is a state of mind reached by the patient that concludes that the cost of not getting the recommended treatment is greater than the price they will pay if they actually do get the treatment done. Nothing is more important in the patient management process than the doctor's ability to convey value. When we teach the value concept to our team leaders, we begin by asking them to show, by a show of hands, how many of them could come up with $10,000 in the next 30 minutes. None of them will raise their hand. Then I tell them that if their neighbor has to leave town today and is willing to sell his two-month-old $100,000 Mercedes-Benz coupe for $10,000, if they can just come up with the cash in the next 30 minutes. I then ask them to raise their hand if they think they could come up with the money in the next 30 minutes for that scenario. It's amazing. All of a sudden, people who just 2 minutes ago couldn't get their hands on $10,000 to save their life, all of a sudden, after value has been communicated, every hand in the room has gone up. This is what value is all about. It's not service. It's something completely different. Doctors mistakenly think that they can wow patients with the unexpected. Everything from a $15,000 fish tank in the reception room to fresh baked cookies and a manicurist working the waiting room. There's nothing wrong with any of these extras, but they're not what patients perceive as value and value rules when it comes to patients showing up for their appointments and referring others to the practice. Imagine a case presentation continuum ranging from a presentation that's too strong on one end and way too weak on the other. Let's say that the very center of this continuum represents the portrayal, or a perfect portrayal, of value. The way this continuum works, the closer the presentation gets to dead center, the broader the range of reachable patients that you can keep in the practice. Even a value-driven case presentation won't keep an unreachable patient on the book. So make no mistake, value is at the heart of high or low missed appointment scores in the average practice. You know you have a value problem when patients say yes to the doctor's treatment plan, and then they claim financial hardship when they get to the front desk. The patient makes an appointment for treatment and then fails to appear. And number three, the patient does follow through, but refuses to refer others to the clinic. See, in this case, you're on the outer edges of communicating value. So how do you reach the value centerline? Well, that's a good question. It's really kind of a long story. One we'll be covering in an audio program later in the year entitled Referral Mastery. I will be covering the basics of value in next month's CD, but it really does deserve its own audio program. For now, let me sum up the whole value concept by saying that doctors who are unsuccessful at conveying value have three problems. Number one, they fail to prove severity of the condition by the patient's way of thinking. Number two, they fail to make the consequences clear of remaining untreated or undertreated. And number three, they fail to tie the patient's loss of function to their everyday life. In other words, what's this really costing you? That's part of the value phenomenon. Remember I said that value was when the patient thinks it's more expensive not to get the treatment? Well, when I say that, your tendency is to think in terms of dollars. Well, some things you have a problem putting a dollar amount to. For example, a patient's inability to do something might have more dollar value than the cost of that procedure.